through each of these, I had seen like the first heat of almost every like obstacle course race is the elite or competitive heat. And I had seen these people, and I'm like, I wonder if I could keep up with them. Like, I wonder if I could do that. And so it's a couple of days before one of the races here, Rugged Maniac, which is out off of or on Snow Creek, or like little ski mountain that we have in Boston. So I jumped in on that and was able to place somewhere in the top 10, which then like qualified me for age group at the North American Championships races. So I'm like, I guess I should start training for this and just kind of started training a little bit more and taking it a little bit more seriously, and kind of gave me goals to push for and strive for.
Hey, welcome back to the Ultra Marathon Mindset Podcast, where we talk about what it takes to go the distance in running and in life. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. I'm an ultra marathon runner and a mindset coach. When trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where the conversation is going to go. So if you're ready, let's get started. Jenny Overstreet is my guest this week. I saw Jenny running at a local 50K. I was volunteering. She was running, had a strong performance in less than ideal conditions. And I learned there that she also competes in OCR, which stands for obstacle course racing. During our conversation, she explained to me the difference between what the different types of various types of obstacle course races that are out there and what she does. She is also moving into various ultra marathons as well. Here is my conversation with Jenny Overstreet. So very cool. Hey, thank you for making time to talk to me.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for reaching out.
Now, tell me, I was your boyfriend is Chad?
Corey.
Corey. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Corey. Yeah.
Yeah, he was the one who told me about you.
Yeah. So. Apparently, you guys volunteered together at.
Well, yeah, right? He ended up, I was volunteering to, well, they didn't really give me a job. And so I kind of saw the need that, you know, there was food that was coming to the aid stations and nobody was really talking about how it was going to get out there. And so I said, okay. So I waited around and grabbed the food and took out to the aid station, and I went, got to the triangle, and Corey says, well, I rode out there with these guys, and I found out they're staying. So he was stuck there.
Oh yeah, and he's injured, so there's no chance he's going to be able to like run back or anything.
So, yeah. I waited around, and actually, then he asked if he could wait to see you go by on the first loop, and so.
Okay.
He was the one who told me. He was the one who told me about you. I was like, well, I will see if she'd come on. She'd come onto the podcast, so.
Yeah.
So how did you do? I saw you were a podium finish on the Psycho Wico, but the little thing you put on Facebook, I couldn't tell what place you took.
Second yeah.
place. Female. When did you get past? Because you were in the lead for like the times I saw you.
So I got passed on the dam on my third loop. So, you know, I don't know. What is that? 4 miles? 5 miles?
5 miles from the finish. Yeah.
That was a little disheartening, but I just, it was okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's tough because that was a tough day.
Yes, it was. Yeah. I kind of wasn't feeling great to begin with. And then, obviously you were there, you saw the conditions and.
Yeah. I've volunteered there. This is my third time. And every time it's been some version of that.
I'm not sure who I was talking to, but they said it's about like one every four that has decent, you know, conditions, like almost all of them are going to be, which makes sense.
Yeah. It's, yeah. Cause I mean, if it would have been either dry or cold, colder, cold enough to freeze, it would have been much better, but,
It would have been a different day for sure.
But it ended up, the weather, the air temperature was nice. The last two times I volunteered, it's been raining and 40 degrees. And so, you know, it was enough to melt, you know, melt the trails and turn them into mud. But then the volunteers were miserable as well because, the 50 degree weather was very, very nice.
Yeah, I bet it was. I mean, yeah, it was a nice day. It ended up being a great day, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's cool. And I know you're history and running. I know you do OCR, but what's kind of your getting into doing ultramarathons? Where did you get started with that?
I blame COVID. not having it, but I grew up kind of running. I played soccer, but I never really, I mean, I do like a 5K here and there growing up, you know, or do like interval work and just like HIIT type of training with some running in it. But I always said that I hated running, actually. but then I started kind of, I started doing OCR and started training more seriously for that. And still just what, like the short course stuff. But then COVID hit and there were no races for a little while. And the only thing, you know, I didn't really have anything specific to train for. So we just started running in the woods. And I just kind of fell in love with that. It took a little while, but like, you know, you just start increasing distance a little bit at a time. And I'm like, well, I just ran, you know, X amount of miles. I wonder if I could do a little bit more. And so it just became fun to
challenge myself. So it was a personal thing. It wasn't, you weren't training for necessarily thinking I'm going to go out and run a 50K.
No, not at all. No. I mean, I will say that I met Corey about that time and he's done, you know, 100 milers and, you know, that kind of stuff. So there was like talk about that, but I still had no interest in it really until, you know, I started just, like I said, adding on the miles and enjoying it more and more.
So at what point did that become like, oh, I think I can do this. All right. Or I think I want to do this.
So actually I had seen, I think it was Psycho Waiko, the winter Psycho. Gosh, I get confused on the years, but like right whenever COVID first started and I was like,
that would have been, you know, that's been 2019, I think. Yeah.
Okay. So like, I was kind of like watching that, but then it didn't happen, I don't think, or maybe.
2019 had happened in 2020. Wait, I'm trying to remember.
I know.
Okay. Because I'm trying to, because we were, the reason I didn't volunteer I think 2020, no. And I'm getting dates, you know,
I know those years all.
I think it was gone. I think it was gone for 2 years. So that must have been 2019, yeah. 2019 and 2020.
Okay. So I'd seen one that did happen. And that was really like kind of seemed interesting to me because at that point or maybe people are talking about it. I don't know. But I'd run out at Waiko, you know, several times at this point and really love those trails. So, I don't know. My first one was in Arkansas. That would have been January of 2021. I did a 50K. So I don't know. Somewhere along those lines, it just started kind of seeming like it would be something I wanted to try and see if I could do it.
So what one did you do in Arkansas? That
David's Trail Endurance Run.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have heard of that one.
Yeah. It's a gorgeous trail. Part of it is very easy and runnable, and then part of it is like not runnable at all. It's very drastically different parts of a 50K course, so kind of fun.
That's cool. So how did you get started in obstacle course? I mean, you're like a competitive obstacle course runner. I saw from Facebook. I think you came in first in one recently.
Yeah, we had a little local event here this last weekend that actually ended up being a lot better than I thought it was even going to be. You know, it was a lot more official and very well put together. They did a great job with it. Not that they don't always, but, you know, sometimes things are different than you expect. But yeah, I started obstacle course racing in 2018. I had been coaching boot camp classes and doing personal training and that kind of thing for a while. And one of my boot camp classes just wanted to do something for fun. Like they wanted something to train for. And there's a local event out here called Kansas City Timber Challenge that we saw. and signed up for. So we went through that as a group and just had a blast. And I think through 2019, we did a couple more. Maybe that's 2018. See, I'm not good at remembering dates. But anyway, so we did a couple of those just as a group, just for fun. And then one came to Kansas City that through each of these, I had seen like the first heat of almost every like obstacle course race is the elite or competitive heat. And I had seen these people and I'm like, I wonder if I could keep up with them. Like, I wonder if I could do that. And so it's a couple days before one of the races here, Rugged Maniac, which is out off of, or on Snow Creek, or like little ski mountain that we have in Boston. So I jumped in on that and was able to place somewhere in the top 10, which then like qualified me for age group at the North American Championships races. So I'm like, I guess I should start training for this, and just kind of started training a little bit more and taking it a little bit more seriously, and kind of gave me goals to push for and strive for. So.
So what kind of training do you have to do? I mean, I know there's a lot of upper body work. So what kind of training do you have to do for obstacle course stuff?
So, I mean, although there are obstacles and they, I mean, every race can be a little bit different, but primarily it is a running sport. So running is, what I do primarily. Yeah. But yes, there's absolutely some upper body strength. There are like heavy carry type things where you're, you know, carrying buckets and sandbags and that kind of stuff. As far as upper body training, you know, it's a lot of pull-ups, a lot of grip strength, climbing. I work in a climbing gym, so climbing is a great cross training for obstacle course racing too. So,
Interesting. Yeah. So you say you work at a climbing gym. Yes. What are you? Are you a rock climber as well, or do you just do indoor climbing?
No, I can't really consider myself a rock climber. I do climb indoors sometimes in my gym, and I try to do it more, but it's just hard to find the time to always. I know that sounds ridiculous, but, but it's like when I'm here, I'm working, so it's hard to, you know, come back sometimes when I'm not here working. But yeah, I am sorry. I guess I got off track there, but I run their fitness program. So I do all of our like group fitness classes, personal training, all that kind of stuff. We have a nice big gym inside of the rock climbing gym too.
Okay. So there's a workout area as well as a.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. We do like full fitness offerings. So, yeah.
Yeah. I've kind of often wondered what, just as, you know, a lot of runners I think are like me that, we tend, if running is just your sport, you tend to ignore upper body stuff.
Yes.
And I've kind of wondered, you know, I've been hearing coaches, you know, as I've interviewed coaches, you know, they've talked about the importance of upper body strength and conditioning and that kind of thing. And I've wondered, is, you know, would climbing be a good cross training for ultra runners? Does it give you the kind of upper body strength that helps you with your running?
I think it definitely would help. I mean, honestly, like it almost in addition to the upper body strength, it's going to give you some mobility work too, and a little more like lateral movements and things like that. But, you know, with running, we're so linear, like so forward, you know, it's good to move other directions sometimes too. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I know trail running is a little bit better because you okay. have, there's the your feet are always making adjustments to the ground, and your stride is not the same, you know, just because I know road runners, you know, they're just the same motion, you know, forever, and they don't have, they don't ever have to do anything different.
Yes, absolutely. And, yeah. I will say that prior to my 50K, the longest distance I had ever raced was a road half marathon. And I did it once and I was like, I will never do that again. I appreciate all forms of running, but it just wasn't enjoyable.
So why was that? I mean, you're probably a pretty fast pace, I would imagine.
Yeah, I think it is kind of what you just mentioned, like the repetitiveness. It's just the same thing over and over. And then also, I just like being in the woods too. You know, this scenery is just very different. I've done a few short, like, you know, 5Ks, 10Ks and stuff, but that's usually just to like help with some speed work and just to force myself to do it. But in general, I just, yeah, like running in the woods, like having some rocks to jump over, some roots, you know, seeing some animals around or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I found that I ended up on a, ended up running a 100 mile on the, that was on gravel and gravel roads with about 5 miles of asphalt on the loop. And it would do three 30 mile loops. And well, one was 40, but yeah, I halfway through, because I'd trained on trails for the entire time. Halfway through, I was like, "Could I just find a rock? I just want to step over a big rock."
Can we make this more difficult?
Yeah. But yeah, and that's the thing that I found toughest was that repetitive motion just wore. You know, hadn't trained that at all.
Yeah, because even trail running, like you do a loop course like that, like you notice something different each time. Mm-hmm. You know the scenery changes a little bit, or you know,
or you completely forget.
Yeah, that's true. You kind of black out and just you know.
Yeah, and at the Hawk, I told my pacer, it was my final loop, and I said, we're off course. I've never been here before. I'm looking around and says, there's no flags. And the course markings were spaced out. And I says, I don't remember this at all. And so she had to argue with me that no, we're not lost.
That's kind of scary. Good thing you had a pacer.
Good thing. That's why it's a good thing to have a pacer. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. So that's cool. So you said you've done some competitive. Did you get into some of the bigger obstacle course? Are you doing like the named races or are there other obstacle course races other than the, you know, the Spartan or whatever the big names?
Yeah. So Spartan is definitely the biggest in the OCR world. The thing with Spartan is, I don't know, I would love to do some, but there are not very many local here. The closest usually is like Chicago or Dallas. And I also am kind of particular about like the terrain. So I'm kind of at the point now where I'd much rather spend the money on going to a trail race in a beautiful, you know, forest somewhere versus paying to just go to, you know, Dallas or something. Not that there's anything wrong with Dallas, but it's just, you know, pretty flat. And so no, Spartan is not really my number one sport. I was doing a lot of, there's a Midwest race called Conquer the Gauntlet. They've gone down to, since COVID, just doing one race a year. So I now actually race for a race brand called Battle of the Lions, which they are in the Midwest. They're new. They actually just had their first four races last year in the Midwest. And so they do a little bit more, again, it is running, but there's a lot more kind of technical type of obstacles. So things that are quite a bit more challenging than you'd see at like a Spartan race.
So like describe that. I mean, I've seen pictures of people running like the Tough Mudder and Spartan. What does more technical mean?
So in terms of like, I'm trying to figure out how to explain this to people. So like, but we call them rigs, like big steel contraptions that have, different types of holds that you have to like swing across, like monkey bars, but with like more things that are hard to hold on to, if that makes sense. Things like that, or like very, very heavy and long. Like I mentioned, carrying buckets and things like that. Like these will be much longer than you'd see like in a Spartan race. Things like that.
You've heard me talk here about Qi running. Qi running takes the principles of Tai Chi, which is posture and alignment and moving from your core, and applies these principles to running. Qi running shifts the workload to your core muscles, which lets your legs do less work, and your lower legs and feet do almost no work at all other than just holding your body up. Qi running is what made it possible for me to run ultramarathons, and I don't have the kind of stress injuries most runners get. I've been fairly injury-free for most of the time I've been running ultramarathons. This worked so well for me, I decided I wanted to be certified as an instructor. So if you live in the Kansas City area, I'm available for private lessons. I have workshops scheduled as well. I limit my workshops to 6, so you get plenty of individual attention. If you're not in the Kansas City area, I can help you get connected to an instructor in your area worldwide, or I can also offer video form analysis, local or online. To find out about what I can do for you as a Qi running instructor, if you'd like to learn more about Qi running, there's a link on my website, ultramindsetpodcast.run, that is .run, not .com, and you can find information about Qi running there. So if you want to learn how to run with less pain and more efficiency, go to ultramindsetpodcast.run, get in touch with me. Cool. So how long have you been, after this with the, you'd mentioned 2018, I think. So you've just.
Yeah. Yeah. So really, I would say 2018 is when I started. I would say that I was always very fascinated by, and I should throw this out there, like, I guess when people think about like American Ninja Warrior, like obstacles that are not nearly as challenging as that, let me be clear, but small versions of things like that. I was always very fascinated by that. And I thought that I might want to train and like try to do that someday. Mm-hmm. But now, like, I love the obstacle course racing because I do really like the running aspect of it. And you get that, the running and like the breakup with the obstacles that just, you know, again, changing things and like, you never know exactly what you're going to get.
Yeah. And so you're saying, I mean, from when I, you know, my looking at it from an outsider, you know, yeah. There are other obstacle course venues out there than I think, you know, Tough Mudder and Spartan, aren't they like franchises or something like that?
They are, yeah. And they are actually now Spartan owns Tough Mudder.
Yes,
one in the same. And they are big, but there are a lot of other races. Like there are a lot of local races. Like I mentioned, the Kansas City Timber Challenge folks that are here in Bonner Springs, Kansas.
I've seen that. And they do that. Yeah. They do that like a family event as well, isn't it?
They do five different types of races every year. So and some of those are family, one of them's like a women's only. But yeah, lots of areas around the country, around the world really do their own local races like that. But then there are other brands that are not as big as Spartan, but like Savage Race is a big one on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. They've got, I don't even know, probably a dozen different races up and down the East Coast. And they're pretty popular and growing a lot too. So
That's interesting. Yeah. Somebody like me decided, it's like, oh yeah, I want to try my hand at obstacle court race courses. You don't have to go and train to be Spartan.
No. In fact, I mean, I feel like Spartan's probably the best one to do.
Oh really? Because it's so much easier.
Yes. Now that being said, like it's fast. You know, there's a lot of very fast runners, especially in a Spartan race. And the thing with like the races that I kind of described that I do is that sometimes an obstacle can be so challenging that you can't get through it, meaning you don't necessarily, you're not able to complete the race. Mm-hmm. Even you won't really see that in Spartan.
Oh, okay.
Spartan's like, there will be challenges for sure, but not anything that's anyone can't get through. Yeah.
So in obstacle course races, if you can't pass the obstacle, you're out, you're DNF.
For the most part, they're a little nicer about it. For the most part, I don't think they say DNF, like maybe like incomplete or something like that.
Means the same thing, right?
Yes, it does. Yeah.
That's funny. Well, yeah, there's people have varying views about DNF, you know.
Yes.
Some yes. people do. So, what are your I guess thoughts about getting, you know, you're starting into ultra marathons. What are your thoughts about where you might go with that?
You know, that's a good question. This season, I don't really know for sure. I struggle a little bit with, I'm competitive a little bit. So the thought of like going up in distance. So the farthest distance I've done so far is 50 miles. 100K seems reasonable and seems doable, but when I think about 100 miles, it and the thought of like running through the night and that kind of thing scares me a little bit. So like I like to be prepared and I like to train really, really well for what I do. So I don't know. I do think that may happen someday, but I don't know exactly when. So
yeah. So what would, I guess, what would be the thing that would spur you to say, yes, I want to do that?
I think it's all going to depend mostly on timing. Because if I'm doing obstacle course races that are, you know, like less than 10K distance, like I kind of need to train a little bit differently than I would for if I was preparing for 100 miles, obviously. So if I could figure out how to kind of work my training around a schedule, I think I would be open to doing it. But yeah, it just kind of, it blows my mind that you guys still do that. You're all amazing.
So what kind of pace do you normally run when you're
pace I run? So like,
yeah, I mean, what was your time? I guess,
wait, it's all over the place. I don't know. Where am I running?
If it was a 50K, you know, what does it take you to finish a 50K usually?
How many have I done? I don't know, 4 of them, I think. The fastest that I did was the Tallgrass Tribute out at the Kanza Prairie. Mm-hmm. So like, I don't know if you've seen the Conquer the Kanza,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's that course, but it's a 50K distance. I think last year was our first one, mm-hmm. actually. So if you've seen that course, it's pretty flat and it's basically gravel. It does have like one pretty decent climb and then just little rolling hills, but nothing crazy. And I think my finishing time was like 4:40, something okay. like that.
So yeah, that's a competitive pace. So that's a very competitive
pace. I mean, I try. Yeah. I'm considering doing that later this month just to see if I can improve on that a little bit. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah. So most, if you're running that pace and, you know, 50K is still a fairly short distance. So for 100 mile, you have to kind of, go for a different, you can't keep that pace. I mean, there are people who do,
some people do. Yeah.
but most of us can't hold the same pace for 100 miles as you do for 50K.
Yeah. And learning that. And I mean, I guess you'd only learn by doing it, right?
Mm-hmm. So again, the DNF. Yeah, for competitive runners, I mean that is a consideration to do that.
Yeah.
So where do you think you will go for your training and OCR racing?
That's a good question. So the World Championships of Obstacle Course Racing are in Vermont. They were actually in Vermont last September. I'm sorry. And they will be there again this year. Last year, it's so much fun. It's just, you know, people from all over the world now. But last year, things were still pretty restricted as far as like international travel and all that goes. So I would like to make that a priority this year, again, just so I can experience, like I said, more of an actual world event. And that's up in Vermont on a mountain up there, which is pretty fun too. It's fun to run on the mountain. It's fun to be surrounded by, you know, people speaking different languages and, you know, competing, but at the same time also like kind of supporting each other too. So I think that's probably my biggest goal as far as obstacle course racing goes.
You've even mentioned distances, and so it's a set distance?
Yeah, so typically with this one, there's like 4 different races throughout the week. It's a not quite a week, like a 4 or 5 day event. and there are like four different distances. So there'll be a 50K, a 3K, and then a very, very short course race too. And then they do like a charity run and a charity 5K. So there's a bunch of different, typically like a 3K and a 15K are the primary races that are like the competitive. Yeah. That
but it is, it's a distance that you run, not so much, you don't run for a set time like the Tough Mudders do.
Yes. Now I think the Tough Mudder, the world's toughest that you're talking about, that is like a 5 mile loop course.
It's a 5 mile loop. And I think they do 24 hours if I remember right.
Yes. And that is actually something that's on my list too. kind of a weird scenario. You do have to qualify for that race, and you typically qualify at a Tougher Mudder. I'm trying to figure out if I can make one of those fit into my season this year so that I can qualify for it. And because that does sound like a lot of fun too.
I talked to a guy who is in fact, he listens to this podcast, and he's done the Tough Mudder before and talked about his experience out there and running for.
Is it Devin?
Devin.
Devin. I know him through that small local group of OCR racers, like just social media, that kind of thing. But yeah, he seems like the fun guy.
Yeah. And he talked a little bit about that, and the fact that the obstacles, there are people, the obstacles that you can't get over, there are people out there who are actually helping you to get.
Yes.
It's more of a team spirit of people helping each other through the course as they go. So.
Yeah. So the championship races that I'm kind of talking about are not like that at all. It's individually based. Like, you're not doing anything with anyone else. In fact, you'd be disqualified if someone helped you. The Tough Mudder and the World Toughest Mudder, like it's just a very cool environment. I think the whole thing is just, people supporting people and the like festival area and everything. It just seems like a lot of fun. So.
Yeah. When I was talking to him about it, it sounded like it would be a fun atmosphere. Very, very similar to what trail runners do. I mean, trail runners are very supportive of, of each other.
I've found that, and I'm learning that. I haven't been able to interact as much with like getting out to group runs and that kind of thing, just because my schedule is crazy. But I've definitely found that in the small, group of people that I've met so far.
Yeah. So as a trainer, do you work with people who are trying to improve their running time? Do you have anybody in the gym who's doing that?
I do not have any run specific coaching that I do. I do help people a little bit, but that's not something that I specifically do. I think it's something that I might want to do eventually. But right now it's like all the run coaching that I do is more just for fun. Like I lead a couple of run clubs here and there, and I just like to see people getting out and moving their bodies. So nothing specific.
Nothing specific.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yes. I guess I'll ask as since you're not specifically to runners, do you, as a runner, what kind of workout, what kind of strength training do you think is the most helpful for you?
So I love strength training. I am probably not, I don't want to, group people together, but I think from what I found, like a lot of runners don't enjoy the strength training part of it.
Most of us are like, I would rather go out and run in the woods,
Yeah. I mean, I will say there's lots of like little accessory work, like hip mobility and certain like strength things that I think everyone should be doing, that I don't always enjoy because it takes up time, but in general, I do just enjoy just general strength training. So lots of squats, lots of deadlifts, single leg movements, like single leg squats and things like that.
So upper body as well. My question is, how much does the upper body strength help as a runner? Because runners, we're great at working our legs, but don't do much with their upper body.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have always done a lot of strength training and used my upper body a lot. I will say that I've had people tell me that like their shoulders are sore, or, you know, things like that after like a long distance run, or even from like carrying their packs and that kind of thing. And I've never really experienced that. So I would think that maybe the upper body strength training that I do helps with it. It's obviously, you know, going to help you create a little bit more, you know, movement and force, I would think, with your body too. I don't know that as a runner, you necessarily need to do heavy upper body work, but throwing in, you know, some push-ups and maybe some pull-ups and that kind of thing a couple times a week would be smart, I would think.
One of the things I have noticed, especially on long runs, is that that my arms, being bent for that long and swinging,
yeah,
that my forearms get very, very sore. And
okay.
And so I've been doing curls, but I'm looking at the motion of the curls. I'm like, oh, that's not the position I have my hands in when I'm running,
you know,
because my thumbs are up on top. And so I've been considering what can I do to help it so that I can feel better with that. So,
that's a good question. I mean, you could consider maybe even running with, on your shorter distances, maybe like a little weight or something, you know, any chance. You know, like 1 pound type of thing,
right.
Like nothing.
Well, and I see runners with handheld water bottles, and I was always like, you know, that looks like too much work to me. And then as I've got in the race, I'm like, maybe carrying a water bottle wouldn't be such a bad idea to get my arms in shape for doing this. And so,
yeah, that's really not a bad idea. I don't particularly like handheld either.
I don't either. It's just, I want my hands free in case I catch a stone.
Yes.
My toe.
and anyone that knows me knows that I do that quite often. So.
Oh, that's cool. So, any dream races that you would look ahead and go, oh, this is, I'd love to get myself up to do that. Bucket list races.
Well, there's a lot, but I'm still kind of discovering the ultra world and all of the races around the world that are happening. And there are just some of the locations, like I more than anything, just would like to see some of the scenery. It's almost not even about the race. It's just like being in that location. Oh gosh. I can't remember names of races now. There's one in Spain that we were looking at like 6 months ago. I'm like, this is going on my bucket list. You know, I'd like to get up on the northwest coast, like up into Oregon. There's a couple of races that I was actually looking at possibly for this year. I'd have to look up the names, but up in the, you know, the forests up there would be pretty amazing too. Yeah. I don't have any aspirations of like Western states, that kind of thing. but I'm not saying I would never do it, but it's not like my dream.
Yeah.
At this point.
Yeah. I know there are people, I, you know, Western states is kind of like the Boston Marathon of, you know, for that's the races that ultra marathon runners are kind of like, if I could get into Western states, that would be so cool. And, and I've kind of looked at it and I was like, I probably would never qualify, or make the drawing, you know, that's like, I know people who've been waiting for years to make the lottery, but, but yeah, I've kind of like, you know, I'll look at other, you know, look at other things. And I've talked to people who've been in Western states and they say it's nice, but you know, there are other races out there that really are just as good or, you know, or just as challenging, with a lot better scenery. Yeah.
Kind of what I've heard too. And at this point in life, I'm like, you know, I mean, yes, obviously I'm competitive and I want to do some things, like I mentioned, you know, doing a race that I already did last year, that just to kind of see time wise where I could improve on, but really like I just want to do things I enjoy. So I want good locations and good people and, you know, all of that.
So have you always been competitive? Is that?
I think so. I don't think I'm competitive in all aspects of life. I think I can kind of pick and choose where I should be competitive. But yeah, if it's something I care about, yeah, I would say so.
Well, and something you have some talent for too. I mean, it's, if you've got the ability to, like you said, you kind of look and say, can I keep up with those people? And you find out that you know, you can do that, then that's a good place to put your energies.
Yeah. Like I tried playing basketball in high school and I was not good at it and I was not competitive. So that was not my sport.
It's always good to know. But you said you played soccer?
I did. Yeah. Yeah. Soccer was my primary sport. I also did some, you know, fun, like extreme sport kind of stuff, like riding skateboards.
And oh, really?
Snowboard kind of stuff. So, yeah.
That's interesting. You know, most of the time, you know, the videos, or the, you know, you go to a skate park, it's typically a male dominated sport.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. I don't really follow this sport much anymore, but sometimes I will see things pop up and it seems like there are more females maybe that, or maybe they're just getting, you know, more attention than they used to, but, yeah, but it definitely was like me and two girlfriends and everyone else we were around were boys at the time. So.
Yeah. Some of my grandkids were involved in skateboarding and, we had to drive them to the skate park, you know, and it was like, you didn't see too many girls out there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely true.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you all for being here. I appreciate your time. Yeah. And before you go, I have what I call the bridge questions.
Who approaches the bridge of death must answer me these questions three. The other side he see.
Ask me the questions, bridge keeper. I'm not afraid.
What is your must-have piece of running gear?
Must-have piece of running gear. I think I have to go with shoes. Like I could change everything, but I have the shoes that I wear. I love. I really do love them. Like I said, I've only done up to a 50-mile distance, so. I don't know if that will change if I do increase in distance or not, but right now they're just the most comfortable running shoes that I've ever worn.
So what shoes do you wear?
They're called VJs, just the letter V and the letter J. Okay. They are I know they're a European country, but they are very big in the OCR community. They have like five or six different models of shoes. But the ones that I wear are called like the VJ Max, and they're just comfortable, kind of a little bit wider toe box, amazing grip. Like they grip on everything, like zero sliding around on anything. And they're just great shoes. So.
Do they drain well?
I wouldn't say that they are the best draining shoes in the world, but they're not bad.
Okay.
If that makes sense. Like it's not bad enough that I've ever had a problem with it. Even like I'll say at Psycho, like I actually at Psycho, they have another brand of winter shoes that have carbon fiber studs.
They have
same
carbon
shoe.
Fiber studs built into the shoe.
You guys got to check these out because they're amazing. you don't have to put screws in them. You can just wear the shoes. But yeah, they drain perfectly. I mean, did you see the course like at the end of the 50K?
I saw parts of it. Yeah. I ended up at the dam aid station at the very end. And so, I had done all of my running around. And so I didn't get to see it fully,
it looks like, I think maybe you run out at that.
Yeah. I run there all the time. Yeah. I was there the week after and it had all dried. And I was out there running on it. And so I saw the, it was hardened by then, but how deep all the footprints were.
So it's always muddy. There's always going to be a part of that that's muddy. But like, this was pretty unbelievable. Like rivers almost like running through every little thing. But yeah, like the shoes, point being, the shoes drained well enough for that race. And yeah, no issues. So.
Second question is, what is the weirdest thing you've seen while you've been out training or even racing?
Weirdest thing I've seen. I don't know if this is weird. Everyone sees snakes, right, out on the trail. Mm-hmm. I hadn't actually seen very many, but I was actually running out at Waco one day and I slipped. I do fall kind of a lot, but I slipped going down a hill and kind of slid off to the side of the trail. And as I looked up, there was maybe within like 2 feet, a snake coiled up in a tree. So like right face to face with me. I didn't know what kind of snake it was. It wasn't like a copperhead or anything poisonous like that. And it was kind of small, but it was still like, you know, I fell and look up and there's a snake right next to my face. I've never gotten up that fast from a fall before. So it's not really a weird thing, but it was kind of interesting.
Well, that's an experience not too many people have had.
Yes. And like I said, the funny thing is that, you know, in all of my trail running, like I joked about the fact that I really hadn't seen a snake, and that's how I saw the snake.
Yeah. Well, if it was in the tree, that would prohibit it from crawling up. Most of the time, you know, snakes here, they feel the vibration on the ground. And so they'll either crawl away or they'll just, if they're off the trail, they'll just kind of lay still and you never see them.
Yeah.
But
he definitely, like I said, I remember looking it up after my run, like trying to figure out what kind of snake it was. And I determined it wasn't anything poisonous or anything like that, but he definitely like crouched, you know, pulled back like he was getting ready to have to like strike if he had to.
So was it?
He did it, but.
Was it black?
But I scared him too. No, it was black with like an orange stripe that went all the way down the side.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. The garter snake.
Okay, so nothing.
Yeah, I didn't know they actually got up in trees. I mean, black.
I didn't either.
Yeah.
But maybe we just don't notice because you're in front of them.
Black snakes will crawl. Black snakes climb trees. Black snakes will go up and feed on the baby birds. And so they climb like way up in the trees.
Okay.
I
didn't know.
And
that.
So, I didn't know the garter snakes would get up in the, you know, I don't think garter snakes would climb as high as the others, but you know, the fact that they just climbed.
And it wasn't, like I said, it wasn't very far off the ground. Like I had fallen and he was,
but so just, was just like a couple feet off the ground. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, interesting. Yeah. So, next question is, what is a word or phrase that describes your life philosophy?
Oh my goodness. That's hard.
See, I give you two easy ones to begin with, and then.
Oh my goodness, I don't know. Can I say chaos? No, I don't know. No, that's not really my philosophy.
Not your philosophy. That may be your reality, right?
Yes, exactly. I would say, I don't know. I just like to do all the things. So like trying new things and I don't know if there's a philosophy, but I do think that, you know, life is short and you have to take chances and there's no reason, you know, not to try things. So.
Well, that is a good philosophy. That's a good approach to life.
I mean, you just never know. Like you never know what you may end up loving or who you might help by trying something or, you know, that kind of thing. So
that's because there are a lot of people out there who don't do that. And,
absolutely. And I mean, the whole no regrets thing, you know, you don't want to get to the point where it's too late or, you know, not able to do it.
So. Yeah. I was with a group of friends I went to school with and it was, I went away. I told my wife, they're all just old. it was more the fact that they were like done with whatever they were doing and they didn't have anything else to look forward to. It's like, yeah, I worked at this job and then now I'm retired and I'm like, well, what are you doing? And, well, and they didn't have a good answer to what they were doing. And I'm like, come on, you're not done with life. You know, there's still a lot left.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
And so that idea of, you know, let's just keep, you know, what you said, you know, don't be afraid to go out and try new things.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? Sometimes you might discover that you hate it and that's okay. Then you know, and you can move on.
Yeah. Or that you're not good at it. I mean, yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. There are things that I've learned I shouldn't do, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Jenny, thank you a lot for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode and you know somebody who might like it as well, please take just a minute, send them a link so they can listen. And if you enjoy most of the episodes, please tell your friends. That's the best compliment you can give. I truly enjoy being able to spend time here with you each week, and I appreciate that you take the time to listen. If you have any comments, questions, or stories that you'd like to share, go to ultramindsetpodcast.run and you can leave a written or a voice message. You can also find the show notes for this episode and more at the same link, ultramindsetpodcast.run. Remember, it takes an ultramarathon mindset to go the distance in running and in life, and a strong mindset is a skill you can learn. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.